Hey, football fans, this is Diana Rossini from The Athletic. Get the top stories in pro football snapped directly to your inbox with our latest NFL newsletter, Scoop City. Jacob Robinson and I will bring you the daily scoop of top NFL articles, posts, and podcasts every Monday to Friday. Sign up for free now at theathletic.com/scoop.
Be the best and you got to pay a little price. Want it bad enough, you got to do a little extra things to get it.
Welcome to the 11 Personnel Podcast, your favorite Rams podcast. I'm your host, Jordan Rodrigue, and with me, as always, my fabulous co-host, Rich Hammond. Rich, how we doing?
Jordan, I look at the clock. It's 9:09 a.m. Friday morning. I know you're very well rested after Thursday nights.
And man, do I look it.
I don't even know. I was trying to think of the right word. I stopped at Friday nights because I'm going, what's the word that I even use to describe what happened? I know you wrote a lot of them on our site, The Athletic. A fantastic column pulling together very quickly and very and it's great job summing up everything that happened on a crazy day, and not just one day but a couple days. Baker Mayfield coming in, the Rams looking like they're circling the drain for about 3 2/3 quarters, and then miraculously pulling out a victory over the Las Vegas Raiders. Jordan, I watched it from the comfort of my couch. I sat here at the end staring at the TV for about a half hour going, what in the world did I just see? What was it like being in that stadium? And I'm really curious, Jordan, about the reaction in the Rams locker room after a long losing streak and then to end it the way that they did. What was your experience of being out there last night?
Well, first of all, we heard music back in there for the first time in weeks and weeks and weeks. And that was a telling sign. And second of all, it just, What I did really enjoy, like on a human level, is watching all of them process this in real time, because it was so unbelievable in the moment. And of course, you know, you've seen all the clips and it's pure adrenaline and pure joy on the sidelines and Baker Mayfield slamming his head into other people's helmets and, you know, like Sean McVay doing like the extended hell yeah, you know, to say it a little bit more politely, and Bobby Wagner's really emotional reaction watching the final drive, and probably a really cathartic one to watch for the defense, especially after that Tampa Bay game where, you know, he's standing right there on the sideline because they don't know if they're going to have to come back in on the field. Like normally they're all on the bench going over the plays and all this stuff, but in that moment, Bobby and that some of the defenders are standing on the sideline because of how it went in Tampa, how they had to come back on the field in such an adverse moment. And this time they didn't, because Baker Mayfield goes on a 98 yard scoring drive with a touchdown drive with a minute 45 to play. I'd never seen anything like it in my life. It was kind of awesome deprocessing with those guys in real time. Sean McVay comes in and he's like equal parts, like fired up and completely in disbelief about what had just happened and totally bewildered. And like, you could see him start to sky down a little bit and his brain was like trying to make sense of it. And it couldn't, because it's not logical and he couldn't put the pieces together. And he just would have these pauses in his press conference where he was like, yeah, I don't even know what the hell just happened. And talking to Rob Havenstein after, and Rob Havenstein, he's like, he starts out the interview and he's like real emotional because they won and all the guys are around him. And then he's the one who's been sort of like holding it together on that line that's so embattled. And all of a sudden, then he starts kind of collecting himself and he goes into like football mode. He talks about like what happened, and it's just this like verbal stream of deprocess that's like exiting his body. And like, and I'm like, hey man, I can, you know, like, it's, I can come back in a minute. Like I could tell you're coming down from this. He's like, yeah. like it was just, and you could sort of see him working through, you know, 100 different thoughts and trying to piece it together. And it just was really, It just was, I think, and then, but like underlined by, they just really needed this. Like these guys really, really needed this. And, you know, snapping a 6-game losing streak, but doing it, and of course it's the Rams, doing it in the most improbable, fantastical, absurd, chaotic fashion that possibly could happen against a team that was rolling in the final minute. And in a fourth quarter that they haven't had yet so far this season in terms of production, just the guys who stepped up, you know, a second year, seventh round receiver in Ben Skowronek with like the catch, one of the catches of the game, Cam Akers on the drive before to push for that extra fresh set of downs and then touchdown. Van Jefferson, the first game-winning touchdown catch of his entire career, could not have tracked that ball more perfectly, especially he had 0.5 yards of separation between him and the DB who was pressing on him. Baker Mayfield said post-game he was shocked that the Raiders were pressing at the end like that, gave him a single high look and man coverage on Van Jefferson out in the X. And it just, you know, a ball. And of course, it comes down to a throw that has a 30% completion probability, according to Next Gen Stats. Baker Mayfield's lowest completion probability throw of the entire game with the game on the line. I mean, Rich, like he said it best. You couldn't write it any better, and I certainly didn't try. I just tried to write what it was. I mean, it just like that's one of those where that was one of the coolest football things to watch. Just the range of emotion going from 3% win probability to 100% win probability over the course of like 25 seconds. It was absolutely insane. I'm happy for Rams fans. There was a lot of inspiration throughout most of that game to turn that TV off. It was not pretty through most of that game.
Yeah.
And, you know, I just think it was such a complete effort to like pull this thing back off the edge of the cliff, from the players to the coaches to the people who have been holding it down the whole time and showing up the whole time. I know we'll get to that, but it was so, you could tell it was so cathartic. And for Baker Mayfield, it was so cathartic to win, not just to win in a new environment, to win that way, considering sort of his like football fall from grace that he has experienced over the last year or so. And to get to waivers as a former first round, number one overall pick, to be on waivers and go unclaimed by every other team except for the Rams, than to get to Los Angeles and to just show up and say, fuck it. That's really what it was.
Right.
I said it more politely in my column, but like the most dangerous thing in the world for other teams are players and people who feel like they've got nothing left to lose and they're just going to go all in, lean into it and just say, fuck it.
Yeah, I wonder if there's almost some lesson to take here. I mean, we both know
a push lot yourself of us, to the brink and then fight out of it. Yeah,
sure. Right. Well, there's almost like it almost seems to me that it's almost a situation where just instincts take over, right? Like, I mean, you're in this situation, and I heard the first question that you asked to Sean McVay last night, and which elicited a great response just about what these last couple days were like for Baker Mayfield and the Rams. And I mean, they got one practice. I mean, I heard Sean say it, like, you know, a couple sessions that they ran through, and then, you know, he and the offensive line are going over 2-minute drills, like, you know, as the bus is leaving or something like that. And it almost seems to me like, I mean, this is a guy, Baker Mayfield, who, you know, you look at his career and certainly it's had, you know, more downs than ups, but he's a football player. He's been playing football player probably most of his life. And I wonder if at some point you stop thinking, you know, you haven't gone through all of this. You don't know things. And you just kind of sit there and go, you know what? I got 98 yards to go here. I've got a minute 45. I'm just going to do what I know, what I've done my whole life, and not think about it and not have the whole playbook running through my head or not worrying about this, but I'm just going to try to go out there and make plays. And I think that's a dangerous person. And I mean that as a compliment. That's a dangerous person who has nothing to lose, who just is out there going, I'm just going to go for this. I'm going to make these throws that maybe I shouldn't even make, that have tiny percentage of success rate. And I'm just going to make them happen. And he did. And great job all around. I mean, you mentioned that the catch that Skowronek made. I mean, my goodness, that was a Pro Bowl worthy catch right there.
Hero and then, ball. That's what I say. We say hospital ball sometimes. Right. That was a hero ball right there.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
And I then need Van a Jefferson. Hero. That was that kind of. You can tell I'm only a quarter way through my first copy of the day.
Yes. We can continue with that if you'd like. You know, and then Van Jefferson to have the focus that he had on to track that ball and make a huge catch in that situation. I mean, just a remarkable thing to do. And again, we don't. You know, I don't want to put too much on one game or one win, especially when we're talking about a 3-9 team. But, you know, I tweeted last night, Jordan, and I think this is
4-9, Rich. 4-9.
Well, I mean, yeah, before this, I meant, but before this win. But the idea that you don't know in that situation what you're going to get from a team. And, you know, I've been around other sports, other teams, other leagues. And you get a team in that situation, and it's very easy if you don't have the right kind of structure, the right kind of leadership, to just go, what are we doing here? Why should we keep doing this? And what I saw from the Rams last night was something that I think they could build on, was that there wasn't that. There was the opportunity. You're down by 13 points with 4 minutes to go or whatever. There's every opportunity there to just go, yeah, We'll get them next year. And what you saw instead was a drive to score a touchdown, a rushing touchdown, no less. And then followed by a great defensive stand to get the ball back. And then, as we've talked about, the most miraculous drive that you can pretty much think of. That told me something about the Rams, and I would apply that across the board, you know, starting with the culture that's been in place over the last 5 years here, then specifically down to Sean McVay and his staff, and then certainly the players themselves too. They're not robots, they're human beings, and they obviously have a lot of pride and heart in what they do, and went out there and weren't content with just turning 8 losses into 9 losses. So I was really impressed by that, and we'll see how that kind of you know, plays out here over the last month of the season, whether they can sustain that, whether they can sustain some momentum. They're not going to the playoffs. This isn't going to be a miraculous situation, but there's a lot of things that can be learned and a lot of things that can be built on from this. So Jordan, I mean, taking off of Baker Mayfield here, I mean, he's now set the bar pretty high, let's be honest. I mean, him coming in and doing this, but what are kind of the reasonable expectations now for Baker over the last month of the season here? And what do you think this is about? I mean, is this a trial? Are they looking at him as something more than beyond 2022? What were the thoughts here, and how do you think that this could go over the next month?
Yeah, so when we hadn't, this is our first episode of the week. If you guys tune into the live show, you could hear me break down the Baker Mayfield waiver acquisition in the first place. But just to kind of reiterate here for those who may have missed that show, you know, this was a move where the Rams, they looked at this as kind of like a why not situation. It was described to me by a couple people as a Sean McVay curiosity project, which I think is fair to call it that. You've heard his comments by this point of sort of his gushing over when he first met Baker. And, you know, it seemed like every insider on the planet was really excited to share out the Southwest Airlines story where they sat next to each other on the flight. And Sean McVay said yesterday he took the middle seat. What a guy, right? And like, so I think, you know, he was really sort of enamored with him as a player and a person when he was, you know, coming out of college, and really, you know, you kind of have seen Sean attached to guys of a certain, like, vibe and stature. And like, you know, you saw him attached to John Walford because John Walford was just going to scrap out every practice and had that sort of mentality and a little bit of an attitude and an edge to him and was super prepared. And you kind of see Sean attached to Baker Mayfield in a similar way. And I'm not saying this to be critical at all. I'm just saying it was like very clear that they just weren't going to really factor in any of this last year and what happened with Baker in terms of what they believed they could make of the situation. Whether that proves to be the right call or the wrong call, we'll see how it goes. But I think they more so were like, well, let's cut through your situation that you were in Carolina. Let's kind of cut through all that and go back to your fundamental tools that we think you have and build off of those from there. And this was really a move where the Rams, it's basically like $1.3 million for what they hope will be a sixth or a seventh round comp pick, because Baker Mayfield will be trying to put tape together to go get a job. That is a fact. Whether it's with the Rams or not, you know, genuinely the Rams really had not considered the possibility of bringing him in as a backup. I think he will want to be a starter, or try to be a starter somewhere. He's a former number one overall pick. He has won a lot of football games. I think he wants to put together the tape to be, you know, a starting caliber player, to have a good market in free agency. The Rams saw this as like, well, if he does go do that, which they think that he will want to do as well, if he does go do that, then okay, you know, that's a comp pick. That's really important to us. And they don't have to, maybe perhaps if he does put together good tape, they don't have to go out like completely mortified. Right. And you beat a couple teams. These are winnable games down the stretch for them. They look a lot more winnable now than they did when the season began. Rams obviously want to beat the Chargers, like all of those kinds of things that sort of factor into it, where, you know, this was sort of like a, well, what do we have to lose move. The converse of it, and you saw some of this, you know, I wasn't going to base it, any sort of evaluation off of what Baker did last night, and I'm not going to do it with his game-winning drive either. I think that it's okay to leave that where it is and have that be positive and just fantastic to watch and like really freaking cool. I think it's okay to leave that where it is, because that entire game was such an outlier. Like, yes, he can make those big time throws. We've seen that his entire career. We've also seen the other stuff too. So, and we know that overall, generally, the Rams offense is in a very adverse situation right now. So basically what I'm saying is, it's now what you see moving forward these next 4 weeks. It's not just Baker being consistent. Less, you know, you're probably going to see less of the outlier games. That was like one of the biggest outlier games in the last 45 years. You're probably going to see less of the outlier games, and you're going to see them try to establish more consistency, because it's not just on Baker to come in and get them good evaluations on all of their younger players, because he can move the ball down the field and he can throw the ball and he's prepared and all of that stuff. It's also on the Rams to build a less adverse situation around him. And it's something that they need to do it differently than, you know, how history the last couple seasons has showed the environments he's been in. And they need to find a way to maximize who he is and his talent during this span, and really figure out who he is, not just on the field for games, but also how he practices, how he prepares. I think they got a good crash course in that this last week. That was just pretty astoundingly remarkable. 40 hours, and you know, he's throwing his first NFL passes in a Rams jersey. And basically what I'm saying is this, it's like, this was the risk in this move is that you're dropping a quarterback into an adverse situation. Like, let's face it, it's an adverse situation where you may not get a clean evaluation because of all of the injuries and moving pieces. For Baker, that is an adverse situation. For the Rams, the adverse situation or the risk is, you know, dropping a sort of a quarterback who is on the particular journey that he's been on into a locker room that has just been remarkably resilient and held itself together. Now, I think what happened last night was really cool, because that is a hell of an introduction to his new teammates. And that is a hell of a moment for them all to experience together, even on such a short-term notice. That's a foundation you can build on, especially again for the next month. I don't know what it means for the future, because I don't think the Rams have really considered the idea of having him as a long-term backup for them. I do think, multiple things being true, I do think they're going to totally overhaul their backups room this spring, whether that's finding a guy in the draft to develop, like maybe a third round, fourth round guy to develop into like a Sean Mannion type, whether that's just, you know, seeing, I guess they've kind of made it clear by this move that they don't think their backups that they have are viable, whether it's signing someone to a low deal. But I think that's where they're at is, yes, they really want to get a good, full, clean evaluation for Baker. The most probable scenario at this time is that they net a comp pick for him because he goes and lands with another team on a bigger deal. And it also, you know, I don't think that this has much to do with where Matthew Stafford is at. I know that, like, it's the hot rumor right now. And, you know, football people are really gossipy. And, like, it's like the hot gossip right now to be like, well, you know, it's a spine injury. Well, it's a spinal cord contusion. And Stafford is in the building every day. He's working out. He's doing all of the team things. The Rams were right to shut him down and he needs to heal. But Sean McVay said, and I know it's Sean McVay and injuries, but he did say and was pretty adamant about this point that he expects Matthew to have a full offseason. The Rams have continued to be openly committal to Matthew as their long-term quarterback. Obviously, that's a complicated situation, but Sean McVay and Matthew Stafford are extremely tied together. They are extremely tied together emotionally, contractually. They are tied together. So as of now, you know, I hesitate into some of that like gossipy sort of speculation.
Yeah, that's really dangerous. And at this point, really not warranted. I mean, I understand why it happens. You're just people get paid to write and talk about the league. And it's obviously a big story. But I think you have to go in with the assumption that that Matthew Stafford is going to be back next year. The really interesting question to me is what you brought into it, which is the future of that quarterback's room. And I think it's a fair point of criticism. And by the way, none of that criticism directed to either John Wolford or Bryce Perkins. I mean, these are two guys, I understand how fans might feel about them and about the way that they've performed on the field. But, you know, those guys want to be in that situation. And they're doing the best that they can. And I don't mean that to be damning by faint praise, but it's like they aren't the ones who assigned themselves to those positions. I mean, John Wolford didn't come in and you know, demand that he be the number two quarterback. Somebody gave him that job. So he's doing what he can with it, and he has a certain skill set, and he's been trying to maximize that skill set. I think the question that you have to look at is on the other side is, you know, what were they thinking there? And they did put themselves in a situation where their number two and number three quarterbacks were not able to come in and continue to effectively run an offense, even knowing that that offense has been severely compromised by injuries and you know, guys just not being available. I think it's become relatively evident that's not the situation that you want to be in. And I do think that was a little bit of a failure. We've talked, I know, Jordan, in the past about how you can't expect your backup quarterback to be as good as your starter. You can't expect your backup quarterback in normal situations to come in and play 8-9 games and have that level be fairly standard. What you should be able to expect is your backup quarterback to come in and play one or two games and be effective and be able to move the ball. And I just don't know whether that's happening right now. Bryce Perkins, a little bit different story. I mean, he's just getting his feet wet in all of this. I don't put him quite in the same level as I do John Wolford, who's been around for a little bit longer, who's been a starter in other leagues. He's had a little bit more experience. So I'm not putting the two of them on equal footing, but I do think that they have to take a serious look at that. And maybe, like you said, bring in a veteran and, you know, somebody who can just is not going to be the most exciting guy in the world, but
well, they might draft one too. I mean, they might draft in a later round pick. I mean, you're not going to draft other than like the extreme outlier. You're not going to draft a fourth round quarterback and expect that he's going to be your franchise guy. I think you've seen that happen with Jalen Hurts, and that's just been an awesome story to watch, but that's an outlier. You know, the backup that wins you the championship game is the outlier. The Rams, when they're dealing with the type of roster build they have, they're not dealing with outliers. They're dealing with the mean on a lot of those positions, including backup quarterback. So I think one of the fair criticisms to lobby here at or to sort of say about this. And maybe it's a reflection of the staff or the communication internally, is I think that it's fair to criticize the clear divide between what works for John Walford and what works for Bryce Perkins and a commitment to John Walford because he runs quote unquote the Rams system and has and like runs the 2017, 2018, 2019 version of that offense and can move a little bit, but not like Bryce and has done it very well in practice, you know, meeting scout team has run the scout team really well for the last few years, but then also, it's not a criticism that he can do all those things, but then also when you have a guy like Bryce and you're keeping him on the roster, you don't have a clear and sustainable plan for building around what he does best as a backup in that offense. So like if Baker Mayfield isn't waived and becomes available and we're looking at an alternate universe here, you're still looking at like this massive sort of disconnect between what the staff has planned for John Walford and then sort of dropping Bryce Perkins into that with a couple of like, you know, more designed run plays, things like that, instead of really building around the types of concepts from a fundamentally run heavy perspective, not that the quarterback will be running, but that you're setting up sort of that positionless run game, which they have done in pieces this year with Ben Skowronek and with Brandon Powell. And you're setting up that type of plan around the quarterback and going fully into it. You've seen, it's like, I don't know, like I said, I don't know if it's like internal or what, but like, there's a disconnect between what the plan, it's like, okay, Band-Aid, one guy's a Band-Aid and the other guy, like there's no cohesion and there's no plan to, you know, on the field to really see, you know, what you can build and sustain. And that was sort of my criticism about the situation pre Mayfield was like, you know, if you're going to keep a guy on the roster like that, have a plan for him. And, you know, some of it probably is on Bryce, too. It's really hard to develop in that position when you're running the scout team. Some of the scout team stuff, a lot of times you're throwing to guys in drills and a lot of things that the QB3 does. Like, it's difficult to do that. But at the same time, where I see a lack of vision for Bryce Perkins, it also sort of, to me, reflects on maybe a lack of cohesion within the staff. And maybe there's different focuses in different areas. A lot of times, it's been really heavy focused on the starting quarterback and the Sean McVay system and Sean and all this stuff. And so, you know, there, it just seems disappointing to me that, you know, let's say we're looking at an alternate universe. I think that in terms of like, I think you've seen now what John is and what he can do. I don't think we've seen who Bryce is and what he can do fully on a sustainable level. I think we've seen some great plays, some bad plays, some concern about his arm, some good throws, but we haven't seen sustainable, like a plan and like full support and cohesiveness around him. And I think that's, you know, at this point, you're probably just better off just blowing that room up and building over again.
Yeah.
That hiring John as a coach, probably, frankly.
Like, yeah. I agree with you. And that's a great point. Like, I don't necessarily think they need to move on from Bryce Perkins. I think they could keep him as what they intended him to be. But like you said, Jordan, there's got to be a plan there. And I'm not really sure that they have maximized that, or this wasn't what they wanted to happen. Like they didn't want to end up in this situation where Bryce Perkins is out there trying to run an offense for four quarters and trying to move the ball down the field the way that they have in the past. That was not part of the plan, but I think if you're going to have the guy on the roster, like, put him out there for a package, you know, get him a package of plays in the normal context of your offense. When Matthew Stafford is your quarterback, we've seen the way that other quarterbacks get used. I mean, we saw the Rams play the Saints and how Taysom Hill is able to come in and be effective at times. It's also been shown that when Taysom Hill is their number one quarterback, it doesn't really work, but he works in a certain context and is able to bring something to their offense that their other quarterbacks don't bring. And I don't necessarily think that what we've seen over the last few weeks means that Bryce Perkins can't do that. It's just that I don't think he's been put in those situations that are going to maximize that for him. So I think you have to either go one of two ways with it. You have to either, like you said, Jordan, blow up the whole thing, come back with an entirely new outlook, strategy, players in that room, or you maybe keep Bryce Perkins, but say, hey, we're going to be more strategic with this. We're going to, you know, have a plan for how we can utilize the skill set so that roster spot is valuable. So it's interesting.
And that's the thing, too. There's also, you know, there's been a commitment, it seems like, to Bryce Perkins over the last couple of years by the front, by like the executives and the front office and the personnel people, because they've kept him on the active roster. In part because other teams were lurking on the waiver wires. They wanted to claim him. The Rams were excited about him. And it sort of, all of that sort of like seems to peter out once the actual game planning starts. And once everyone, I don't want to say gets distracted, because it's really hard and it's a lot of work, and I'm not saying that at all. But the actual development part, like, I don't know, it just sort of seems to like just gas out at a certain point. And I think that's, in a season like this, that's really hard, because you don't expect you're going to need your backups for as long of a stretch as the Rams have needed their backups. But I think they're learning a lot. Sean McVay said this a few times this year. They're learning a lot about the gaps that they've left that they need to fill.
Yeah, which is important. I mean, it's important to look at that and be honest with yourself. So I give them credit for that. It's going to be a fascinating offseason. But, you know, Jordan, just to put the kind of bow on Baker Mayfield, and I mean, I think you touched on it on your answer, too, is this is going to be really interesting. I mean, not only from the Rams' perspective, but from Baker Mayfield. I mean, he's got the eyes of the NFL on him right now. I mean, literally, after what you do on a Thursday night game. But I don't think that's been the question about Baker Mayfield. I mean, everybody knows he's capable of that. Everybody knows that he has physical gifts and can make magical moments happen. I think what's going to be fascinating here is, over this last month of the season, that word that you used, consistency.
Yeah.
And can this, you know, knowing what this team looks like right now and, you know, knowing what the offensive line looks like and everything else, but can you, and I'm not saying work magic every week, I'm not saying consistently work magic every week, but can you consistently show that you have the ability to run this team, to run this offense, to be an NFL starting quarterback? He's got a real opportunity here, and that's really all you can ask for somebody in his situation, is to show that he can do that, to show that he earns a spot. So that he's obviously very motivated. I know there's other guys, as we get closer to the end of the season, you know, guys are playing for their jobs, guys are playing for you know, maybe an invite to training camp next year, things like that. So there's a lot of motivation going on over the you know, last month of the season here. And by the way, Jordan, just to put a bullet point on the last drive there, did you notice, and I think you did, what kind of defense the Raiders were playing?
A shocking one, Rich, a shocking one.
And it didn't work.
You're damned if you do, and you're damned if you don't. This league really is hard. Are. This league is hard. It's like such an oversimplified way. The Raiders did not play prevent in a 2-minute with the Rams when the Rams had no timeouts left.
Right.
And the Rams moved the ball 98 yards down the field and scored. They got helped by two penalties. Yes. We're going to like just say,
sure,
I mean, it is what it is. Like,
yeah.
I don't argue. Like, I'm not, as you guys know, I'm just not one of those people that just, and I'm not saying like it's a bad thing. I think there were some crazy calls in that game last night. I hear you. I agree with you. Like, on either side, that it just was such a flag happy game. The head ref was a mess from the second he came out and like botched the verbiage of the coin toss. Like, the dude was a mess.
I heard that. Right? Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
This guy was a mess. Okay. He's like throwing his hat because he can't find his flag. Like, this dude is a mess. Okay. So I'm not like disagreeing with any of that. We're going to just look at the football. We're not going to look at like those two calls specifically. I think that, you know, you obviously like the, like slamming the football out of someone's hands or whatever. Like, obviously, right. If you do that in front of a ref, it's going to get called 10 times out of 10. Right. So that was, you know, Jerry Tillery, former Los Angeles Charger, like didn't help his team in that regard. But all of that aside, you know, and the roughing call, you know, like, again, it's like physical play. Like, again, it's happening right in front of the ref. You're like, okay, fine. But so yes, they're helped along by the two penalties, but they're playing prevent, or they're not playing prevent.
Right.
Or even like zone, like not even necessarily prevent, but like, they're not even playing zone with the end zone behind them. And like, I think the Raiders have done some really incredible stuff on defense this year, and they should be applauded for that. And they're really smartly coached, well-coached team on that side of the ball. But I echo that. I'm like shocked that they're clearly daring Baker to beat them. And he did. And that's the thing. You're damned if you do, and you're damned if you don't. So like, in a converse situation, it's Baker Mayfield on that side, and you're daring Baker Mayfield to beat you by manning up and playing single high. And then you're manning up Van on the outside and ISO. And like, imagine if it was Tom Brady and you,
right.
And you manned up,
right.
Like it could have been probable that Baker Mayfield does not beat you in that situation.
Right. Right.
Tom Brady's going to beat you if you're in press in that situation. Anyway, we're saying this because it's like a deep irony. This league, it just is, it's difficult, and anything could happen. It's like 5 or 6 plays per game that change the outcome of every game. And that was one of them. That was a decision. That was one of them. Baker Mayfield said it multiple times. He was shocked. They were impressed. It's just standard general football practice to be in a prevent in a 2-minute like that, to try, especially with no timeouts, to try to keep the team on the field, to try to make sure that they're not going out of bounds, to try to keep the clock moving, to try to make them sprint up to set the line of scrimmage, like all of those types of things on a silent count, all of those things that the Rams overcame on that drive that the Raiders defense was not. And it's just interesting because it's like the same thing that Raiders fans are slamming rightfully the Raiders for. Rams fans were rightfully, I think, at the time, in terms of the execution error, not in terms of the plan, were slamming the Rams for when Tom Brady did essentially the same thing with, you know, less time and less yards to go. It's just crazy. Like, stuff like this. I mean, it's been a chaotic year. The irony does not pass me by. It's not to say, guys, that everything's been perfect. It's not to say that there aren't execution errors. You saw them again last night. But I think the defense, it just kept showing up last night. And you saw this in the Seattle game, too. Bobby Wagner setting a certain type of tone. He's one of the few stars that is still on the field at this point. And, you know, Jalen Ramsey has had a mercurial year. And Bobby has been one of the few consistencies that this team can count on day after day after day after day. And, you know, that's not to discount the work Jalen does behind the scenes, because he does a lot of stuff that people don't see in terms of trying to get these young corners who have been very inconsistent up to speed. But in terms of on the field, snap in, snap out, same level of energy, same level. You saw it spike against Seattle. I think rightfully so. It was an emotional game. But Bobby Wagner, I mean, you can't ask for a backbone better than that.
Yeah, that's one move. I mean, we just spent quite a bit of time talking about the backup quarterback situation. And I know earlier in the year, we debated the Allen Robinson situation. But I mean, bringing in Bobby Wagner, they clearly had a thought and a plan. And look, nothing ever goes exactly the way that you think it would. But from my perspective, Jordan, that's exactly what they wanted out of Bobby Wagner. When you talk about the combination of on-field play and what he does on the sideline, what I'm sure he does in the locker room when nobody is allowed to see that, I think it's exactly what they had in mind. And it's not a surprise. Everybody knows what Bobby Wagner has been over the past years in Seattle and what kind of person he is and what kind of player he's been. You never know exactly how that's going to translate when you go to a new team and a new building and a whole new situation. But to me, that worked out exactly the way that you would have hoped it would. And it's unfortunate if you're the Rams that it kind of gets lost in this season of, obviously there's so much going wrong and so much on the other side of the ball that you just can't fix. But that's a great move And it's a move that if things were better on the other side of the ball with injuries and all of that, then you would really see the impact of it, I think. And it's a little bit unfortunate that we're not able to, you know, kind of see the translation there. But
yeah, Bobby Wagner, 14, led the team 14 tackles last night.
Wow,
obviously, 14. One of the criticisms of Bobby was that he's aging out. This was like one of the reasons Seattle like parted ways with him. And on a short week, right after he had a 2-sack, 1-interception game, I think it was like 6 tackles, 3 for loss, 2 sacks, an interception against Seattle. And then also then followed that on a short week with a 14 tackle game against a really, you know, tough to defend multiple offense Raiders team that had been running all over people previous to this. There's a really great clip. It's kind of floating around, but there's a really great clip on it was like a 3rd and 1. I think it was, I'd have to go back and look specifically, where Derek Carr stays checked into the run because Bobby and Ernest switch places very quickly. And Derek Carr stays checked into the run and you can hear him going, "We're good, we're good." And Bobby puts his hand up and does the come and get it kind of thing and then makes the run stop. There's like, it's a really cool clip. It's basically like a defense that they need that. Like this defense has been, yes, very inconsistent in phases. And the one place where they have not been inconsistent is how they have avoided game breaking runs, how they've defended the run. You know, they entered the week like fourth or fifth in run DVOA. They entered Seattle week and fourth in run DVOA, run defense, and then first in defensive EPA per rush. Obviously outstanding effort, Bobby Wagner being a huge part of that. Even with Aaron Donald not on the field these last 2 weeks, even with A'shaun Robinson not on the field these last 2 weeks, the Rams have still set Bobby, who should not be moving sideline to sideline on every snap anyway at this point in his career, they've really done a good job setting him up for success in those type of plans where it's like the old coaching saying, you put your A-plus players in their A-plus positions, and that's his, is filling the run, particularly a lot of those inside concepts, and filling it at point of contact so you're not getting the yak, and you're seeing on that on a lot of those short downs that he's able to do. On a holistic level, I think it's really important that we don't gloss over his effort, even though this is all about the offense. This game was like a breakthrough for the Rams offense, especially with as much as they've struggled in the pieces. But I think it's important, like that fourth quarter was really, really complimentary in a way that this team desperately needed. There's the stop, you know, that 3rd and 1 stop. Yeah. And let's not underscore either. Like Josh Jacobs had been running over everybody the last few weeks at an historic rate. And yes, he had 99 yards, but it's 3.7 yards per carry. So it's 99 yards. And he had to really battle for every single one of those, really pick away at every single one of those, you know, outside a couple of longer, like outside zone stuff where Michael Hoyt didn't seal the edge well. And then they adjusted, they put Keir Thomas in, and then he had a run stop. So I thought that was interesting to watch. A couple of smart people on Twitter pointed that out as well. And it just was really interesting to watch. It's just like, you know, you can talk about all of the schematic shortcomings. I keep saying, like, this is not what this defensive scheme is supposed to look like for a variety of different reasons. Not the least, some of the personnel issues they've had, and not the least, some of the growing pains that they're experiencing. But also, they just don't quit. They just do not quit.
Right.
And right. I got to say, like, you know, you hear over and over again, like when a group is struggling on this roster, and for a while it was the offensive line and they're still struggling, don't get me wrong, but you'd hear about whose office they were going into. Hmm. You know, you'd hear about, you know, Rob Havenstein getting advice from Raheem Morris about, you know, players only meetings. And you'd hear about like how players who felt isolated would go gravitate toward that space. And so for all of the growing pains and all of the criticism, which at times I do think is fair and at times I think is absurd, especially in this hellscape of a season that they're dealing with, it's been interesting to see like who has come forth and sort of emerged as leadership, not necessarily always in the most impactful position. And I think that's goes again for Bobby. not necessarily always the most impactful position, but the undercurrent of that backbone that has been there, that has been really important in emerging on the defensive side in a variety of ways, and not just from the players, from the coordinators as well.
Yeah. Yeah. Great. Great points, Jordan. And that's just, it's stuff that doesn't always show up on the surface, and sometimes it does. And sometimes it doesn't immediately, but you can absolutely see the impact. I mean, I think of what, you know, Andrew Whitworth meant to the Rams back in 2017 when they brought him in. And it's, I'm not drawing a exact parallel. There's a lot of different situations there and different.
Man, they could use Andrew Whitworth hanging around that building in a year like this, though. My goodness, they're missing that cohesion, you know,
right.
They were missing it on the offensive side. I'm not saying that there's offensive guys are bad leaders at all. I'm not saying that at all, but you lose that many people and like, who's holding that thing together, you know?
Yeah, exactly. And that's a hard thing to put on paper. You know, like, you can't, there's no mathematical equation that makes sense there. I mean, it's just,
if you're working so hard to please the head coach and to find answers for the head coach, how are you then also dedicating your time to being a glue person in there? You know, like, and so for all, he had so many assistants this year, and I can honestly say, and I do not mean this as a slam. I think a lot of it, it's just lost in the chaos of the season. He had like crazy amounts of offensive assistants. He had Jay Gruden consulting from the outside, allegedly, like all of this stuff. And I cannot name one of them who, other than Thomas Brown, who has been there and been sort of that steady guy. I can't name, and I think you're going to see like Zach Robinson emerge, because Zach Robinson, I hear, was really, really crucial in getting Baker up to speed, you know, because you have to game plan too. And so like the head coach and the OC are game planning, and you have to get the new quarterback who just got into town. You have to get him up to speed. And, but it's been really, it's felt really, you know, it's felt kind of disconnected on that offensive side this entire year. And I know that's like, you can't really quantify a vibe check, but it's really like, it's really felt like that for all of the ideas that they were supposed to have being pushed in. And then I think a lot of it comes with, well, all of a sudden now you're just backpedaling. You're in scramble drill every single week over week over week. And when you're trying so hard to plan around chaos, like complete personnel chaos, and you're trying to please the head coach with, you know, those game plans and all that type of stuff, what falls through the cracks in that regard? When is it that you miss, you know, an Andrew Whitworth holding things together? Just a presence that's there. And I think that's why you've seen this defense hold together in the way that it has, because not only are they quite literally separate from, you know, having to deal with that chaos, they also lost a lot less. They had some personnel issues, granted, but they lost a lot less in a longer or shorter amount of time. And they also, you know, it's kind of, it's, you're in a space where you have like a former head coach in there who's been through it, who's been through some lousy seasons, by the way, and who also doesn't really care, you know, if he's not going to rise and fall with the temperature of the head coach, is what I'm saying.
Yeah. Yeah. The dynamic there is very interesting, because your first instinct might be to say, well, the more brain power you can have in there, the better. And I think there is some truth to that. But you also need to kind of harness that brain power the right way and harness that leadership and make sure that it's cohesive. And that's something that I would say it's fair to say that the Rams probably want to take a look at that this offseason. And by the way,
I think they will.
I was going to say, well, it dovetails nicely into kind of where we wanted to end here a little bit, which is that this morning, and again, Friday morning, report out, I believe, first from Chris Mortensen of ESPN, saying that offensive coordinator Liam Cohen plans to go back to the University of Kentucky as offensive coordinator, which is obviously where he spent the 2021 season. If that ends up happening, Chris Mortensen is impeachable as a reporter. There's going to be some dominoes there, Jordan. So, first of all, if that does happen, are you surprised at all about that? I mean, we see these younger coaches move around all the time. They're trying to find their best path forward. So, I mean, how does that hit you, first of all? And second of all, do you have any early thoughts kind of about that domino effect and kind of how that plays into what we were just talking about here with the staff?
Less surprised, understanding a little bit more as time has passed about what the nature of that job, you know, under McVay actually looks like, and what it would have probably felt like in a season like this. Definitely less surprised hearing how I, you know, over the last couple of weeks had heard about how hard Kentucky was planning to pursue him. Great opportunity for Liam and his young family. You know, and so these are all like, nothing's ever official until the paperwork is signed. Right. And it's one of those things where people will probably drag their feet about it publicly because the Rams are still in season. But you also saw other changes as well in terms of Rashad Samples accepting the receivers coach and passing game coordinator job at Arizona State University, my alma mater. I reported that move earlier this week, which kind of got lost in the rest of the chaos of the week. But
it did.
You know, Rashad had colleges coming after him, you know, right up until he took the job with the Rams, and then right after that too. So especially considering, like I said, the nature of the role, the way that it went, and then the, you know, substantial nature of these college programs and what they're offering coaches at this point, it doesn't surprise me as much. And I think he, especially for Rashad, getting a chance to be more involved in the passing game, which is where his background is, that's important. And I asked Sean on Monday about his coaches and has he gotten enough from his assistants? Has he done enough to provide clarity and communication to those assistants? I was kind of not stunned, but I was not expecting him to be as reflective, openly reflective as he was. And he basically was like, it's been really hard getting everybody up to speed in such a short amount of time when he had less of an off season than he usually does to really gather around. Sean McVay is really proud of like how he goes out and finds coaches and builds his tree. Like, he'll never call it a coaching tree publicly. Like, he, I guess, does not like that, but he really likes hiring people. Like, he really likes going out and finding coaches because he likes ideas and he likes, you know, he likes learning from people. He likes football. He loves football. And so I think like that was one of the things he's disappointed in with himself is like, did I hire the right guys in some cases? Did I rush things in other cases? Did I throw somebody, and I would say probably I would include Rashad in this, did I throw somebody into a situation where they maybe weren't set up with all the tools to be successful in, you know, 27-year-old first year NFL coach in probably one of the more isolating jobs on a football staff in terms of the way that the meetings are structured, in terms of the way the game plan is structured, in terms of the way that the communication is structured. And then at the same time, you know, you have this like complete catastrophic implosion on the offensive line, which is directly connected to the run game, which is directly, you know, connected to, you know, maybe a lack of mentorship and communication between those two places. And, you know, all of this works or doesn't work together. I think that he's going to have a long runway now to decide what he wants to do. I think changes are coming, whether it's guys taking new jobs or Sean McVay letting some people go. I think both of those things will happen. And I also think that like he's looking all over. He's looking at all parts of this, not just the offense, but at the defense too, and some of the development of the younger players and moving parts, and is good enough okay? Is being good okay? Or how can you turn a B into an A or an A into an A+? I think he's got more time now to do that. And he was really, when I say he was reflective, he's really quite reflective on how the attrition sort of caught up to them this year. They lose so many coaches every year, a lot of it not through Sean McVay's own terms. And now a lot of this will be on his terms. I think that you're looking at coaches who are smart, who understand the lay of the land, who know that, you know, it's probably a best case scenario for both parties if they move to a new space. That's not to say that's an overarching umbrella for everybody who will move to a new space. These college opportunities, like I said, some of them are really, really good opportunities. But it does seem like Sean McVay is going to have a lot more autonomy and time to build this thing out and rebuild this thing out the way that he wants. One other thing, and I will just drop this in here before we close, is the fact that he's thinking about this stuff, I think bodes well for his 2023. Like, he's thinking about how he wants to shape his staff for 2023. And a guy who's like ready to leave probably isn't thinking about it that way. Just saying.
No, that's a very interesting point, Jordan. I actually hadn't thought about that because, yeah, that's obviously a topic of conversation here, right? Is what is he going to do? Like, is Sean McVay coming back? So, yeah, you're right. It certainly doesn't, when you read the comments, doesn't sound like somebody who's about to head out the door. So that's a great point. I hadn't thought about that at all. So yeah, fascinating stuff and really important stuff. And again, like we talked about, maybe something that doesn't show up every day, but has a huge, huge impact on the development of this team and the way that this organization goes forward in what's going to be a very interesting offseason. A little bit of a break here. I know you never take any breaks, Jordan. So I know that that nothing changes there, but the Rams have a little bit of downtime now before they go, speaking of former coaches, before they go to Green Bay and take on Matt LaFleur and the Green Bay Packers. So like we said last week, even though the record isn't what Rams fans would hope, there's a lot of interesting stuff going on here. Certainly we never expected. I loved the joke somebody made on Twitter, Jordan, saying, oh yeah, you guys didn't record your podcast on Monday because you knew this was going to happen. I was like, oh yeah, nope. Absolutely. Absolutely. We saw it coming the entire way, just the way that we planned it. But it's the thing you love about sports, and that the unexpected things can happen. And I have a feeling that over the last month of the season here, that there's going to be more. There's going to be a lot of fun stuff to talk about. Jordan, fantastic job as always. I know we mentioned it earlier in the episode, but you've got to go to the Athletic app and website. Check out the column story that Jordan wrote last night. Won't go too inside baseball, but to pull something like that together the night of a game amid all of the chaos that's going around, very, very impressive. So congratulations on writing that awesome story. I know our subscribers already know that. They are very well aware. But I also know, Jordan, that there are some out there who've been on the fence. I get it. I understand. But now's the time, folks. Now's the time. You can go to theathletic.com/11personnel right now. Give yourself a holiday gift. And that is a subscription to The Athletic, all of Jordan's awesome coverage over the next year, and you will get Jordan's favorite thing in the entire world, which is what?
A great discount. You guys, every time you subscribe to The Athletic through the 11 Personnel podcast, you get my favorite thing in the world, which is a great discount. Guys, this was a crazy one. This was a crazy week. The emotional roller coaster that is the Rams 2022 season continues. It's going to be an exciting last month here. You know, the Rams, they're going to go out swinging. I think they've showed us that. They've tried to show us that this whole time, but they really have showed us that in the last couple of weeks. And I think if you're a Rams fan, even amid like the trash fire that is this team's record, I think there's a lot of things that this group can build on again if they take the correct lessons from this. And Bobby Wagner said it really well earlier before going out to play Seattle. You can build from this, but you decide how you build. You can build something good or you can build something bad. Either way, the tools are in your hands to build. And I think that it's an interesting framing because there are a lot of lessons here, I think, for a lot of people on this staff, in this building. I know us on the outside, I know me, I'm learning every day. It's a different kind of learning than when you're covering a championship run, but it's a good learning all the same, and certainly learning a lot from the people around me. I certainly love sharing what I learned with you guys. This has been fun. I mean, it's been interesting, but it's been really fun. This year has been something else, and wouldn't want to do it with any other group but you guys. Really appreciate the coverage, or excuse me, really appreciate you following along with the coverage. Rich and I are going to be back. You know, it's a what we call a mini buy, and hopefully this podcast sustains you through weekend. Might jump on a live show at some point next week, but other than that, we'll catch you guys after the Green Bay game. I will be there. I will be bundled up because now I'm soft after being back on the West Coast for a few years. I have now become soft, so I'll be bundled up and in Lambeau, ready to bring you guys all the coverage you could want, and hopefully some more exciting times. So. Guys, as always, hope you're taking care of yourselves. Hope you're taking care of each other. Stay hydrated. Stay caffeinated. Key phrasing in times such as this. And we'll catch you next time.